Chapter 38, January AD 2065, Year 8, ERC, Summer. For Wu Ji, day 513 of the Pioneer 14 mission started out as a good day. Because for Ji, 513 was a scheduled garden day. He felt good about it from the moment he woke in the Jones's Inc. shelter module that had been designated as his personal space. Simply because, in the endless cycle of triple rotations, which they had all been enduring for 17 months already, today was not one of the 1 in 3 working days he was assigned to general maintenance, which mostly consisted of scrubbing mould off the walls. And not one of the 1 in 3 days he was supposed to spend on the Pioneer's Bridge, monitoring the ship's status, checking engineering and science feeds, smiling cheerfully for some PR broadcast maybe, more likely than not, from newly elected President Jeff Lang, who seemed to use the Pioneer as a kind of mirror of his own fame. Ji's main problem with the bridge, though, was the view out of the windows. The feeling of isolation in there could be crushing. There was no sense of motion, of movement or acceleration. Their dark energy drive's thrust was just about enough to settle dust, but not enough to feel. Nothing to see of the inner solar system, looking back, save the sun. Itself no more than an unnaturally brilliant star. That and the distant stars, and looking forward, the backside of their huge ram scoop. Nothing to do but work your way through the latest material sent up from Earth, always painfully upbeat, while constantly being reminded of that huge gulf of distance that separated the Pioneer from home, most of all by the lengthening light-speed delay in comms with the ground. 24 hours each way now. Even Marina Petko, who had gone as far as Mars, had been only ever light minutes from Earth. Bad mission design, he sometimes thought, psychologically flawed. But he had had a hand in that design, and could hardly complain. You would think it would be much worse for Sarah West, their tame Jones Inc. engineer, a tremendous intellect, tremendously courageous, and yet who had not even gone so far from Earth as the moon before this jaunt. But of the three of them, he sometimes thought Sarah was the least affected by the isolation. Although it was hard to tell, she was notoriously taciturn. She had seemed to open up a little more as soon as the plant she tended in the garden started growing. She was a city girl, it seemed, without so much as a window box to bring a little life into her home. In her Texan drawl, she would say, "Shame I had to scoot all the way out of the solar system before I discovered I had green fingers." Anyhow, Ji didn't have to face any of that today, for today was the day he could spend in the garden that comprised most of the habitable volume of the craft, the trays of green growing stuff in their enclosed environment that kept the humans alive and, probably, sane. He was well aware that part of the attraction of the garden for him was that it was so similar to the setup on the lodestone, where he had been stationed for so long, even before the blink. The basic engineering was the same, with a megawatt of power supplied by a compact fission plant to sustain the water pumps, the air dehumidifiers and cleansers, the lamps that provided the heat and light needed by the growing things. And the Pioneer's garden felt much the same, with its mixture of growing crops, including hydroponics, staples like rice and potatoes. The more exotic rainforest species that added flavour, vibrant colour, even medical support. So now Ji pulled on his heavy-duty coverall and looked out his tiny personal toolkit. He knew there was a bulky filter in one of the hydroponic beds. Get the heavier, dirtier stuff out of the way first. He was just about to leave his cabin when he got the call from Marina on the bridge. "Ji, you'd better come up. We have a problem." Shit. He just hung there, weightless, for 5 seconds. Then he dumped the toolkit. He left his coverall on. When he got to the small, cluttered bridge, Marina, dark, intense, was working numbers. She didn't look up when Ji entered. He stayed by the entry port. He had developed a habit, when some problem came up, of waiting, just looking, giving himself time to take it all in, before firing off questions or interrogating systems. So now he saw that the windows had, as usual, been cleared to transparency to reveal the real-time view ahead. which was, essentially, a scattering of distant stars around a central disk of darkness, itself spattered with a more regular array of lights, marker beacons on their immense scoop sail. He did glance now at the readouts describing the state of the scoop, their single most advanced piece of technology, and the most crucial, the only means they had of getting home. Once the sail had been much smaller in their field of view. At first it had been used as a mirror, a brilliant array that had spanned 40 kilometres, deriving a motive force from the intense sunlight that it captured. But as the light intensity had diminished with distance from the sun, the sail had spread further, a smart material growing, thinning, designed to capture the same amount of total energy hour by hour, day by day, becoming at last a wall across the sky, a wall now with the radius of a small planet. And then, after 15 months or so, they had transitioned to dark energy running. The smart material had reworked itself again, thinning more, spreading itself further still, turning itself at last into a kind of webbing, not quite translucent. But across that webbing were embedded exotic neutrino sources. These were actually tiny quantum-level, zero-net-energy particle accelerators, and were the key to exploiting dark energy. Dark energy, the field that was slowly driving the whole universe apart, was a phenomenon of a higher-dimensional space called the bulk. That, at least, was the mathematical description of it, as Xi understood it. The universe was expanding like the surface of a higher-dimensional balloon, whose volume was up there in that bulk, a balloon which was inflating more and more. And that was where the dark energy came from, up in the bulk. So each of the sail sources produced a stream of an exotic kind of neutrino, decoupled from normal matter energy, that could reach up into that bulk and, somehow, extract and store the tiniest scrap of that dark energy. All those scraps brought down from the higher dimensions and turned into kinetic energy. Like fruit plucked from out-of-reach branches, were what drove the ship forward. Something like that. Xi had always hated trying to render all that down into a summary the public could absorb. School kids and politicians. Actually, the school kids generally got it quicker. So the Pioneer was a dark energy ram scoop. In principle, it could fly on, without any external input save the dark energy, until it sailed beyond the larger galactic cluster, or even further, pushing ever closer to light speed. Clearly it worked. Here they were. A miracle ship with a lousy view ahead, anyhow. And a miracle ship that, maybe today, wasn't working. So, he asked at length, a problem? Marina was still paging through numbers on a screen in front of her. Xi looked over her shoulder, saw nothing obviously amiss. She murmured, may not be a problem at all. News from Earth, however, an anomalous deceleration, they say. Copy. He heaved a sigh. He settled into a seat as his illusory gardening day finally shattered in his imagination, and a grain of worry formed. Anomalous was never a good word to hear in space. This deceleration, then? She gestured at the console before her, pulled graphs, columns of numbers into the air with waves of her hand. It's real enough, but slight. See here? Their acceleration, even with their monster ram scoop sail, was tiny, and the marginal deceleration Soup had noticed was tinier yet. A fraction of a fraction, but it was there. Xi said, 0.25% of our nominal dark energy acceleration. Yes, but measurable and steady. Rising, if anything, the ground are saying. She peered ahead, troubled. Some fault with the scoop, perhaps. With the neutrino sources? Some kind of evaporation effect from the scoop fabric? That could create a counterforce like this. Perhaps there was some systematic design flaw, not revealed during the manufacturing processes, or covered up. She pressed her lips together, troubled. Xi shook his head. He had learned that Marina, a product of a Russian industrial base that was still riddled with graft or at least, more so than America, China, and other advanced economies, was too ready to assume technical failure through human incompetence or even malevolence. I don't think the data indicate that. Look here. He paged through more numbers. The tension in the scoop itself and in the cables doesn't indicate that kind of flaw. There's no anomalous stress between the ship's components. It's not as if the sail is pulling harder or less hard. She shrugged. So then what? He tried to open up his imagination. He had the sense that he was facing a novel problem requiring a novel solution. So, if our scoop isn't failing, he said slowly, thinking aloud, and the structure is retaining tension, it's more as if some external force is acting on the whole ship. Scoop, lines, habitat, and all. Marina frowned. A force like gravity?
I think that's exactly right, came Sarah West's voice over the comms. Her face appeared in a monitor. Sorry to butt in. I've been listening in. I figured this was more important than de-sludging air filters just now.
Can't argue with that, G said. An external force like gravity would exactly have this kind of manifestation, pulling on all parts of the ship with equal acceleration or deceleration. Whereas a failure of the sail, say, ought to cause a relative shift of the components.
Gravity, Marina said, sounding puzzled again.
How could that be? Gravity fields come from heavy masses. This is a deceleration, remember? There is no heavy mass behind us until you get to Neptune. And even that's not in the right place, she thought. A while back, we did notice the odd deflection of those TNOs.
TNOs, trans-Neptunian objects, lumps of ice, potential comet cores, floating around out here in the dark.
That could indicate the presence of some anomalous mass, pulling stuff aside through gravity.
A mass we couldn't model, Xi reminded her, meaning they couldn't find a plausible solution within understood physics.
Yeah, okay. If we had passed some planet-sized mass in the dark, we would have noticed.
Right, Xi said, trying to think it through. Even detected it from Earth, decades ago, probably.
Yes, Earth agrees. Marina tapped a finger on one screen. So, see here? Most of the guff they've been sending up has been reports of failed attempts to model it with some conventional deflector. But here... She pulled out a short report. Some smart guy at Soup smuggled in a suggestion that the source could be ahead of us, rather than behind. Pushing rather than pulling, you see?
Xi said, a source made of what?
Never mind. So what does Soup recommend we do now?
Well, they bounced it off the brain domes of the boffins at JPL.
Do you want the full academic study complete with references, the abstract, or just my own headline?
Headline.
Wait and see.
Ha!
Okay then. He looked down at his grubby coverall. I guess that's what we do. While I get on with my gardening.
Marina still sounded troubled.
Wait and see. How long for? We need some kind of target here, a trigger for action.
Xi nodded, hesitating.
Fair enough. Sarah, you say the deceleration is a quarter of 1% of the sail's pull right now. Let's keep modelling, measuring. See if this mysterious push changes, increases, or even decreases. If so, how? Does it obey any kind of power law? And if we get to, say, one quarter of the sail's pull, well, maybe we will know what action to take.
Marina pursed her lips. I think Soup would say that would be recklessly late.
Well, Soup aren't here, are they? And besides, it's not clear to me what we can actually do about this. We monitor, we model, we wait. Agreed?
An American grin over the comms. A Russian shrug.
Good. To the garden for me.
In the days that followed, on the ship as on the ground, the pushback, as it was coming to be called, was measured, modelled, studied, with various mathematically inclined brains. Human and artificial, trying to find some model that fit both the data and the laws of physics. The effect was so small that the data were patchy, though trends emerged in time. the deceleration looked simple enough on a graph. A steadily rising curve, approaching a straight line on a logarithmic scale. Xi had the feeling that the ground staff were enjoying figuring out the puzzle, as long as it was doing no immediate harm. But the crew were physically immersed in the mystery. It seemed to Xi that it was as if the pioneer were inching into a head-on breeze. Even though he couldn't possibly be able to sense any deceleration physically. But the deceleration, though slight, was real, consistent, measurable, and slowly rising. It was as if the unfolding phenomenon became embedded in Xi's own consciousness. As he went over the various hypotheses, the numbers in his head over and over, he had the ground run wider literature searches, trying to find other theoretic models, over scraps of speculation that might fit the observations. But then, scraps of speculation were all they had about the nature of Galaxias, anyhow, which they had come to investigate. Maybe, he thought, in the recesses of his head, they were starting to find out something at last. And meanwhile, day by long day, the mission went on. Xi continued to take comfort, or at least distraction, from the one day out of three he spent in the garden, that and exercising in the zero-gravity facilities, or cooking up whatever fancy meal for the others he could invent from their limited stock of ingredients, another skill that was remnant of his months aboard the Lodestone. Or he would just roam around the ship, the hull, this peculiar half-improvised assembly of 40 shelter modules in their stack of square frames. After a couple of days of data gathering, the first firmish conclusions emerged from Earth. The pushback roughly followed an inverse square power law. It strengthened with diminishing distance the same way gravity would if you were approaching a body like the Sun or Earth. The closer you got, the stronger it got. But in this case, the force was a push, not a pull. A push from something ahead of them at an apparently empty point in space. And the models indicated that the pushback would rise to Xi's arbitrary target of a quarter of the scoop's dark energy acceleration at 12 or 13 days after the initial observation. So it would be reached around day 525, when the ship would be nearly 180 astronomical units from the Sun, almost exactly six times as far out as Neptune, twice as far out as the Sun's blink day location. The theoretical studying continued, but day 525 became embedded in everybody's heads as a kind of threshold, beyond which nothing could be predicted. And in the interval before that date, reluctantly, driven by an obscure kind of guilt, Xi frequently turned his attention to Earth. Day by day, his inbox was generally full of news, if 24 hours out of date. Tash, Mel, and other sources had been fulfilling an honesty pledge they had made before launch. They sent Xi and the rest as much data as they had on the state of the Earth, and answered any questions as fully as they could. Nothing censored. Little of the news was good, but as Tash had argued, this was the world they aspired to return to someday, so the astronauts ought to be told the truth. The truth, 2 years after Naples. By now, it was thought, globally some of the high-level acid haze was at last dispersing, more sunlight getting through. But the first year after the volcano, a year of drought, had been followed with a lurch to the other extreme in the second year, with months of excess rainfall. As rivers burst their banks, and the rains washed away what spindly crops were growing, all around the world national borders began to close against new, hard-pressing washers of refugees, starving children, pandemics stirred up by peoples on the march, war threatening. And in his home country he learned there was increasing concern about Russia, with its restless populations already retreating south from the climate crisis era, one-generation-old northern latitude colonies, and once again eyeing the expansive lands further south still, beyond the Chinese border. Xi carefully chose not to discuss politics with Marina Petko. All this because of the blink. Xi's hatred of Galaxias grew visceral. Thinking of China, though, made him think of his mother. Wu Yan was still involved in her supremely strange project on Mercury. Soup kept him informed on the progress of the replicator swarm there. By now the machines had all but devoured the crust and were burrowing down into the mantle of liquid rock beneath the crust, evidently adapting quickly to the changing conditions, the densities and temperatures, and copies kept rising in a cloud around the planet. Still nobody was clear what the ultimate purpose was. His mother sent Ji no information about that. Indeed, he heard nothing directly from her at all. Thus time passed. Hours, days, counted off on the ship's clocks. As predicted, as they neared a distance of 180 astronomical units from the sun, the headwind force rose steadily and smoothly, until now it was indeed approaching Xi's nominal tripwire of a quarter of their dark energy acceleration, and in fact was already starting to take a significant bite out of their accumulated velocity, which had peaked, after the best part of a year and a half of steady acceleration, at nearly 0.5% of the speed of light. Soup and JPL had started to call the phenomenon the barrier. And Sara West said she had figured it out. "I think so, anyhow," she said, almost nervously. "A bit of speculation in one of the grounds reports set me on the right path." All three of them were in here today. The garden, the mould on the walls could take care of themselves for a few hours. Sara's hands sculpted light in the air over the bridge's control surfaces. Mathematical light, spinning and twisting columns of numbers, tentative graphs. Ji and Marina stared in bafflement. Sara said, "The pushback has been rising with time, okay? The more time goes on, the faster it rises. I linearized it to get to the power law. Look, you can see it. Inverse square, simple as that. Just as Soup figured independently. A lot of scatter from the uncertainty of the measurement. These have been small incremental effects, and we don't know the dynamics of the dark energy scoop well enough to be absolutely confident of how it responds to the pushback." Ji picked out one term from all that, inverse square. "Let's go back to basics, like gravity, yes? Start at some distance, one unit. You get a given gravity pull, a given intensity. Go out 2 units, and the gravity falls not by half, but by a quarter. Go out 3 times as far, and it's a ninth." "This is elementary," Marina said, a little coldly. I know," Sara said. "What stopped me seeing it clearly was that it's backwards to the way we are accustomed to thinking." She looked out of the window, to the black, blank wall of the sail. "I think I know what's out there. The barrier. It's negative matter. A mass of about the size of the sun, I figure. With a negative gravity field. Has to be. That's what is pushing us back. The ground were right. It wasn't a pull at all. Negative matter is..."
"I know," Ji nodded, growing excited. "Of course! Shit! I should have remembered. Mel told me about this. For sure. Somebody should have thought just to ask Charlie Marlowe. Never mind. A negative gravity field, just as Charlie retrospectively deduced to have been acting on Mercury. Just before the blink. It's some kind of signature of Galaxius Tech, maybe. It makes sense. We should have got there quicker than this." Marina was still frowning.
"So what is negative matter?"
Sara said, "Well, it's been pretty much hypothetical until now. Never observed in nature, until I'm reading now the tentative blink day evidence at Mercury, as Ji says. There's a theory that it might be manufactured at the event horizon of a black hole, where a pair of particles might be created, positive and negative mass canceling each other out, with the positive partner being swallowed by the hole."
Marina said, "If you could get to the point. It's not anti-gravity, not quite. Gravity is a positive force. Every mass exerts gravity on every other mass, and gravity always attracts, yes? But a negative gravity mass repels all other matter. That is, it repels not just our kind of matter, positive matter, but other clumps of negative matter also." She smiled. "Imagine it. A negative gravity star out there, dark, brooding. And the closer we get to it,
the more it tries to push us away. Half the distance, four times a push, inverse square.
You say this stuff repels itself. So how can it clump?
Marina waved a hand. How the hell can there be a solar mass of it out there? Why doesn't it just disperse, blow itself to pieces?
Good question,
Xi said smoothly, and he remembered non-scientist Tash Brand asking the exact same question, long ago and far away. The theorists have this covered. The answer must come from the fact that negative matter obeys other physical laws. So it's not like dark energy in that regard, which is subject only to gravity. The best theory is that negative matter can be electrically charged. Maybe there are great clouds of it out there, held together by electrostatic charges, which overcome the gravitational repulsion.
Very well, Marina nodded.
What then is it doing here?
Xi and Sara exchanged a glance.
Xi said, I think the answer is obvious, especially as it was detected in the vicinity of the sun around the blink. To collect such a mass of this stuff, to control it so precisely, why to use it as a technology? Would have to be a galactic-scale project, conducted by a galactic-scale agent. I think we have found Galaxius, or its works.
Indeed, Sara said.
Oh, I should have said, according to this modeling, the source is pretty close by.
She gestured towards the sail, about one astronomical unit. We are already as close to this source as Earth is to the sun.
Xi had imagined he was beyond being shocked. A solar mass of it, that close. He paged through imaging updates. We can't see through the sail, but we have plenty of cameras on the leading side.
Sara shook her head. I should have checked.
She tapped a screen. Up came a magnified image of a star field, a black circle at the heart.
Ta-da, she said quietly.
Xi said, it's there. Shit. Sitting there all this time. There is a lesson we should have learned from the Almirich. Every so often, look out the window.
Sara shrugged. It's much denser than the sun. Physically smaller. About a 1/16 the diameter. I'm trying to check the mass estimate. I mean the size of the negative mass, with gravitational lensing, which ought to be more obvious than with the sun itself, given it's so small. Lensing, the deflection of the light of the distant stars by its gravity field.
Xi nodded. Like Einstein's famous solar eclipse experiment, where they proved relativity was correct, mass bending space. Of course this, negative sun, would push starlight away rather than attract it. Detectable even so.
Marina put in, and the TNOs, the anomalous scattering, could your negative sun do that?
I think so, Sara said, simply by pushing TNOs out of their orbits, as opposed to dragging them in, like a normal matter rogue planet, say. Everybody would have been looking for a pull source, not a push source. And so they were looking in the wrong place. I do need to check the modeling more carefully.
And what about the lurker on the moon? Xi's mind was racing now. The projectile it fired out after blink day. Could that be a similar effect? Some kind of negative matter drive?
Sara smiled.
Possibly. I'd have to model it.
It would be elegant to hypothesize a single technology to justify all these effects.
Xi said, I think we need a break. Time to take all this in.
1 hour. Sara shook her head. I should keep observing, refining the modeling.
Okay, do it. 1 hour. Try to get some rest too.
We'll convene then, and we'll put together some kind of report for Earth.
Reluctantly, they agreed.
So they broke. Xi tried to relax, but couldn't, despite his own advice. He ate, drafted a report for Earth, brainstormed queries, hypotheses, concerns, listing them on his phone. He had always enjoyed working in remote stations, even the Lodestone, where he was not under the constant command of mission controllers on Earth. But now, just for once, he longed to be able to talk to JPL or Soup, to somebody in charge, without whole days of time delay.
Also, Mel Kapoor, Tash, even his mother, though he found it hard to admit it. They reconvened on the bridge after the hour. Sara was first there, and when he arrived, Ji wondered if he had rested at all. So, Marina said briskly, bustling in after Ji, given this magic repulsive gravity force. The anti-sun, Sara said. Ji smiled, hearing the capitalization in her voice. Anti-sun. We've named it. First step to dealing with it. Marina said, if this is the work of Galaxius, what does it have to do with the blink? Ji rubbed his face. Actually, I have some ideas about that. I looked up negative matter myself. It's thought you could build a drive with the stuff. With theoretically infinite capability. A negative matter rocket. He grinned and held up two fists. It sounds crazy the first time you hear it, but it's logical. Suppose my left hand is the sun, the right, the anti-sun. The anti-sun pushes at the sun, which moves further left. He moved his left fist that way. But the sun attracts the anti-sun, so the anti-sun follows, going left too. His right fist followed his left, and they just keep chasing each other. He shut up and let them pick holes in that. Rubbish! You're getting kinetic energy from nowhere. Not to mention momentum. What about the conservation law, Ji? You ought to have got that yourself, Sara. The negative matter has a negative energy content. Negative momentum, too. So you start with no kinetic energy and stay with no kinetic energy. Even while the two stars chase each other around the cosmos. Start with zero. Plus and minus add to zero. End with zero. Marina continued to frown. Very well. But what has this to do with the blink, in which it seemed our sun was instantaneously transported out here? Well, at light speed. Ji shrugged. I don't know. But it can't be a coincidence that the anti-sun here has the same mass as our sun, and that it lies pretty much on a straight line out from our sun through the blink point. This barrier must have something to do with it. Even if it's just the equivalent of, hell, I don't know, a primitive but necessary technology to support the rest. The concrete pad at the base of the rocket launch gantry. He glanced out of the window. Maybe we are only at the edge of it here. Perhaps out there there are huge engines we have yet even to glimpse. Whole hierarchies of them, surrounding the solar system. An infrastructure. And we can't even see it. Or only this one element. Next question, Marina said. Are we going to crash into that thing? That shut them up. Ji had the impression that she had been bottling up the question. The negative sun, I mean, we are heading towards it with what is presumably still a good fraction of our incoming velocity. No, Sara said. We won't get that close. The negative gravity field will become intense as we close in. My preliminary estimates show we will probably be pushed away long before any impact with, well, whatever is there. 405 radii out. We shouldn't get any closer than that, and we won't come to any other harm. Remember, this thing has the mass of a star, but it is not a star. There seems to be no radiant energy, no light, no heat. I estimate that we will come no further than about half the moon's distance from Earth. Marina snapped. How do you know? Because we are moving too slowly to get any closer. It's counterintuitive, at least for us creatures of normal matter. We know about escape velocity. You would have to be traveling 600 kilometers a second to escape our sun from its surface, for instance, to get away from its gravity field. Any slower, and you would fall back. Here, it's different. Here, you would have to fall in faster than 600 kilometers a second to force your way through the push of the anti-gravity field and reach the surface. Does that make sense? I guess, Ji said uncertainly. Now, the anti-sun is smaller in size than our sun. The radius is about a 16th. Though it has the same size mass, but negative. It's actually smaller than Jupiter, and I will leave the reason for that to the physicists. Because it is smaller,
The surface capture velocity is that much larger than the sun's escape velocity. Anyhow, it's too powerful for us to reach. We simply aren't coming in fast enough. Basically, we will be pushed away by the anti-gravity field as we approach. In the process, at worst, we might hit a few hundred gravities. But remember, we should come to no harm. The anti-gravity is an inertial force. As the ship is pushed, so are we within equally pushed, and we will continue to float around safely. We won't feel a thing. Marina frowned. Easy to say that. What about tidal forces? At closest approach, even a small distance may make a difference to the size of the forces working on us. Negligible, Sara said. I checked. Well, probably negligible. I'll go over it all again. We may need to lock down the scoop before closest approach, though. That's a pretty fragile extended structure. I believe we will emerge unharmed. There is the question of what to do later. Later? After the closest approach. It's possible we could just turn around and begin the long journey home, boosted by the anti-sun's field, before we let the dark energy ramjet take over again. Ji frowned. Or we could stay here, in this odd system. How? Marina snapped. This is not a gravitating body. We cannot enter a stable orbit around it, can we? Hell no, of course we can't. True, said Sara. But look, we have our scoop, the dark energy thrust. I told you, I figure that acceleration will balance the negative gravity repulsive force at, well, about here, half an astronomical unit out. And so, you get the idea? I think so, Ji said. The anti-sun pushing back would be exactly balanced by the scoop pulling us forward. Yes, Sara said. In fact, the anti-sun seems to be pushing at the dark energy field itself, as if there's a breeze coming from it, for our ramjet to tap. It would be like the lodestone, Ji said, that's held in place in the umbra of the Earth by a balance of forces. It would be an unstable equilibrium, right? He held out his forefingers, pressed them against each other, mimed a slip, a slide. But we could manage that actively. The ship is smart enough for that. It may be useful for humanity to have long-term observers here at the nearest thing we have to an outpost of Galaxius. Who knows what we may discover? He eyed Sara. From what you say, it sounds like we need to make a decision to commit to this course now. I mean, before we wait for a 48-hour round-trip conversation with Earth. Indeed, Sara said. We must use our own judgment. We can always set off for home later, Marina said. But... Go on, Ji said. Well, this anti-gravity field is a pretty gentle barrier, isn't it? Even for a ship like ours, made of spiderweb and thistledown. It's not an aggressive technology. It's as if... She held up a hand, mimed a scoop. It's as if Galaxius is guiding the moth from the candle flame. She spoke softly, her Russian accent coming out more strongly. That's one interpretation, Ji said, more coldly. He found it hard to think of the entity that had killed his fiancée and so many more people as non-aggressive. Sara asked, an alternative interpretation being... Think about it. Okay, we set off from the sun, headed roughly out to the blink point, and on through. What were the chances that this solar mass object would be right here, right in our way? Ah, Sara said. Good point. You couldn't shield the whole solar system this way, with solar mass blockers everywhere. So Galaxius came to meet us. She held up her own hand in a stop gesture. Galaxius is shielding us from the flame. But we are not allowed to go any further. Correct. Ji let that sink in. Then he said, okay. The purpose of the trip was to explore Galaxius's capabilities, its intentions. Well, now we know. It is bottling us up. With kindness. Well, we have a way forward, and we have work to do. Let's go over the arguments again, then draft some kind of update for Earth. And then... He glanced out towards the huge, occluding shadow of the sail. Until we're ordered home, this ship is going nowhere.